Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
So, how's life in Miami?
It's lovely here.
All right, you guys ready? Okay.
Hi, everyone. I'm Emily Chang, and welcome to this edition of the Bloomberg Studio 1.0 podcast. Today's guest is none other than one of the biggest crypto bulls out there. He runs the company that owns more Bitcoin than any other company in the world, at least as of the end of 2021. Also, he may well be the longest-running software CEO in history. Michael Saylor started his career riding the dot-com wave and saw that bubble pop firsthand. Could crypto be another bubble waiting to burst, or is it the future? Joining me on this edition of Bloomberg Studio 1.0, MicroStrategy Chairman and CEO Michael Saylor.
MicroStrategy holding all this Bitcoin, does it ever make you at all nervous?
No, actually, it gives me great comfort. I don't really think we could do anything better to position our company in an inflationary environment than to convert our balance sheet to Bitcoin, because we basically built a balance sheet on a non-sovereign store of value that's not a currency derivative. 2 years ago, we were sitting on a bunch of cash, and that cash was losing about 10% of its purchasing power a year. And then when COVID struck and the Fed took a more accommodative monetary policy, that cash started losing 25% of its purchasing power a year. So my anxiety was maximized around April, May of 2020, when we had the K-shaped recovery. And I realized that cash is trash. Everything's about to get much more expensive. And we needed a strategy. So we adopted a Bitcoin strategy. It's driven up our stock by a factor of five. In my opinion, it saved the company from a not very pleasant fate. So I'm totally pleased with where we are today.
Just Bitcoin? None of those other thousands of cryptocurrencies?
Look, Bitcoin is digital property. It's universally acknowledged as common property because it had a fair distribution, no ICO, no management team. Satoshi disappeared. It's pari passu to a commodity, to land, to gold. And it's pretty important that it be deemed property. The rest of the cryptos could be securities. There's just a lot of regulatory overhang and question about whether they're securities or not. And I think that the great innovation is the creation of common property in cyberspace. It took us 13 years to get to the point where that's universally acknowledged. So that makes Bitcoin the safe haven for a public investor or a public company. Everything else feels more like either venture capital or speculation.
Now, you personally are, and the internet can correct me if I'm wrong, the longest running software CEO in history. You founded it in 1989 when you were 24 years old. What has this 32-year ride been like?
You know, I learned a lot of humility. We came public in 1998, so, now I've been a public company CEO for many, many, many quarters. I live to see 99% of my peers exit the business. So I didn't really understand this at the time, but now as I look back, what I realize is all my peers exited the business because they're forced to grow their top line and their cash flows at a frenetic rate, and eventually they get undone by dilutive acquisitions, and then they have to sell themselves. MicroStrategy, we've been very fortunate. We've been focused. We soldiered on. And we've always had a passion to make the best software we could. And as our competitors disappeared, we found opportunities.
You grew up as an Air Force brat, traveling around the world. What kind of kid were you? Tell us about your upbringing, a young teenage Michael.
I read a lot of science fiction. I read pretty much every science fiction book by all the great science fiction writers, probably two or three times. I played Dungeons and Dragons. you know, before we actually had these Wizard, Warcraft, and other games on computers, we actually had to draw out the dragons, and we had to write down what's in the dungeon, and we had to construct our entire virtual world. So I think before computers, we used our imaginations to create simulations and to exercise probability and distribution. And it taught me a lot about practical statistics. My background led me eventually to trip over a book by Robert Heinlein called Have Spacesuit Will Travel, where the protagonist gallivants across the universe, saves the human race from bug-eyed monsters, and for his services to humanity gets a full tuition scholarship to MIT. And it stuck in my head that MIT was probably a good place to go if you believed in engineering and making the world a better place.
You studied aeronautics, I believe, and then you pivoted to tech and founded MicroStrategy with one of your MIT fraternity brothers. And the software basically provides business intelligence, helps companies make sense of their data so that, for example, McDonald's could learn how many Big Macs it might sell in a given night in Chicago. Is that right?
Yeah, the idea is to extract all of the data at an atomic level, like every item sold every hour of the day in every store in the world for every McDonald's. What we discovered is the world's full of companies that have billions of lines of data, and they're trying to make sense of them, and they had to extract those sophisticated sets of data, compare them to each other in order to make a decision about a marketing campaign or a product launch or even something as simple as how many items should I have on each store shelf? And it's worth a lot of money to get it right. And if you get it wrong, you find out that you don't have the products you need when people want to buy those things, and it costs you a lot of money. So we were in the right place at the right time there.
You've witnessed some serious roller coasters. You saw the dot-com bubble blow up and burst before your eyes. What lessons have you taken away from that informs your strategy today?
I would boil it down to this stoic observation, right? You can acquire a thing, but, you know, can you maintain the thing? And if you can maintain the thing, can you enjoy the thing? And what I discovered is a lot of people acquire things they can't maintain, and a lot of people can maintain things, but they can't ever enjoy. And so you want to boil it down to another metaphor. It's laser focus. You have to figure out what you are the best in the world at and what you can continue to be the best at the world at in the face of unrelenting, exponentially increasing competition. And once you figure out what that is, focus on it with all of your resolve. And if you do that, then you can stay in business. That's the first thing I learned. That's why I have laser eyes on Twitter. The whole point of laser eyes is you've got a solution, focus on the solution. Don't get distracted by all of your good ideas and allow it to dilute your focus on your great idea.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Studio 1.0 podcast with MicroStrategy's Michael Saylor. Up next, about this crypto winter, is he feeling the cold? Saylor shares his predictions for where the Bitcoin market, or roller coaster, is going next. Stay with us.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes. 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
The decision to bet on Bitcoin to acquire the thing, would you say that's your Phoenix moment?
I would say it probably is. I never said it like or thought about it like that, but I feel like most of my life was leading up to this point, and I understood the power of dominant digital networks like Google and Facebook and Amazon and Apple because I rode that for a decade. I also understood the detriment of not being that dominant network. MicroStrategy competes against Microsoft. We compete against companies 100 times as big as us. When we got to 2020, what I saw was the winning strategy is digital transformation if you have the dominant network. The losing strategy is to continue to work harder and exponentially harder for a currency growing exponentially weaker. And I had a sense of the consequences if we did nothing, because I had seen the demise of 99% of my competitors, and I could see where we were headed if we stuck with the status quo. We would have to either adopt a Bitcoin strategy or sell the company, and we elected to pursue Bitcoin.
What was the reaction from investors, from other CEOs, CFOs, when you put Bitcoin on your balance sheet in such a big way, compared to the way they're reacting now?
You know, many people didn't really understand Bitcoin very well. They haven't taken the time to focus on it. Even today, I would say that 98% of the population hasn't spent 10 hours thinking hard about Bitcoin. So in the year 2020, I think most people were just ignoring it. It wasn't really registering with them. Maybe 1%. I think that when we talked to our investors, what was interesting is privately, most investors were aware of Bitcoin and they thought it was a good idea. Publicly, their institutions that they're part of have a 3 to 5 year time lag from the point at which they can adopt new ideas.
So about this possible winter, are you really not feeling the cold?
Look, if you're going to invest in Bitcoin, a short time horizon is 4 years, a mid-time horizon is 10 years. The right time horizon is forever. You know, Warren Buffett said, you know, if you wouldn't hold it for 10 years, you shouldn't hold it for 10 minutes. So if you look at the course of 4 years, no one's ever lost money over 4 years holding Bitcoin. And if you look at, you know, our experience, we started buying it at $10,000 and now it's up by a factor of four. So given the right time horizon, you're fine. So it's a blessing and a curse. The blessing is it makes it the most exciting, interesting thing in the financial universe everywhere in the world. And the curse is it can induce anxiety for people that have a short attention span or are focused on a narrow time horizon.
What do you think then is behind this early 2022 crash?
I think that there's a lot of dynamics here. If you look at the entire crypto ecosystem, you have a set of regulatory uncertainty, especially regulatory uncertainty around stable coins and crypto tokens and whether or not they're securities. And that creates a little bit of anxiety. You have a lot of leverage offshore. Right? You have a lot of crypto exchanges that can trade with up to 20x leverage. And those crypto exchanges have many, many tokens that are cross-collateralized. And between them and the DeFi exchanges, you can get much higher than 20x leverage. So that's a second source of volatility. The crypto markets are almost designed to encourage volatility. And that creates kind of a love-hate relationship between the crypto ecosystem and the Bitcoin hodlers. The Bitcoin hodlers are holding for, you know, a decade, you know, and sometimes for 100 years and sometimes for 1,000 years. And yet you've got fast money hedge funds that have a tax incentive, a huge amount of leverage, and massive volatility. But you have two totally different investment mentalities here. And when they come together, the result is you've got, in my opinion, the world's least risky asset to hold over the next century called Bitcoin. And you've got the world's most volatile fast money market, you know, called crypto. And they're both joined at the hip, for better or for worse, in the year 2022.
So clearly you're a hodler. But for the people who are terrified, who have never been on this roller coaster before, shorter term, what does the trajectory of Bitcoin look like to you this year?
I feel like it's consolidating at this level. This is a great entry point for institutional investors. I talk to high net worth individuals, family offices, public company executives, private company owners, and they watch Bitcoin run up in 2021. And there are a lot of people that would be afraid to own it if it was going up 400% a year. But if they're staring at it and it's 40% off the all-time high and it's consolidating, and they see that it's being embraced by people like Bill Miller, by very well-respected investors. It's being embraced by the regulators. It's being embraced by senators and congressmen and public investors and public companies. They're looking at this as like a good entry point. I'd be remiss, Emily, not to make a more important point, which is what's really going on here at a macro level is inflation, the CPI headline inflation is 7%. Look at the Turkish lira. It's collapsing. The peso is collapsing. So there's a volatility story for a conventional investor in Manhattan that's got a portfolio of equities. But 75% of the world can't buy the S&P index. They're in Africa, Asia, South America, and if they've got their assets in banks, they're going to have them seized. They can't buy the equity. So the real story here is digital property that solves a problem that 8 billion people face.
The big question is then, are you going to buy more? Yes or no?
Yeah, we're going to buy more. We're buying more with our cash flows. We've adopted a Bitcoin standard, Emily. That means that when we generate cash, we sweep it into Bitcoin. We've been generating, anywhere from $70 to $100 million of cash flow. So we will also buy Bitcoin with debt. We bought Bitcoin with $1.7 billion worth of convertible debt. We bought Bitcoin with a $500 million senior secured note that we pay 6 1/8% interest on. We also issued $1 billion worth of equity at the market, and we converted it all into Bitcoin. So combinations of cash flow, equity, debt, potentially through other partnerships.
This is Bloomberg Studio 1.0 with MicroStrategy founder and CEO Michael Saylor. He promised to host a yacht party when Bitcoin hit $100,000. When does he think that will be? And what kind of regulation is he planning for ahead? That's next. This is Bloomberg Studio 1.0.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You promised to host a yacht party when Bitcoin got to 100,000. When do you think that will be?
The 100K party. You know, when I did that interview, it was the fall of 2020, and I think Bitcoin was trading at 15,000. And John Vallis wrote me in. He said, "Will you host the 100K party?" And I said, "Well, sure, I will." There was no doubt in their mind the party's coming quite soon. I was just amazed at the confidence of Bitcoiners. I don't have a price target for when it's going to happen. What I learned is laser focus. Stuff takes time. I'm comfortable with us working through this year over year. I don't need instant overnight success.
What kind of regulation are you anticipating? Which way do you think the Washington winds are blowing?
There's a profound shared appreciation that digital assets are the future of the financial industry, and the United States needs to lead. And I've been pretty impressed at the support in the Senate and Congress from the administration and from regulators all around the world for this entire crypto economy. And in the use case as digital property, I think that the regulatory treatment is pretty clear. If you sell it at a profit, you'll owe capital gains on it, just like if you sold any other property. I think that with regard to the cryptocurrencies, the stable coins like Tether and Circle, they're going to be regulated as currencies. Clearly, the administration wants to see FDIC-approved and insured banks issue them. So I think that that we're going to see the banking sector enter into the stablecoin market. I think that many other cryptos are deemed as securities and will be deemed as securities, and they're going to be regulated as securities. I think that the marketplace is waiting to see what those expectations will be. And I think it's pretty clear that the writing is on the wall with regard to crypto exchanges, right? The SEC wants them to abide by the principles and the rules of national securities exchanges. And they've said that in the spot ETF denial letter that they wrote and on several occasions. So I think the regulation is coming to the exchanges. I think regulation is coming to the crypto security tokens. I think that with regard to stable coins, this is going to be a good thing. Right now, the stable coin market is maybe $170 billion all in. It's grown dramatically, but the truth is there's a demand for trillions of dollars of U.S. dollar stable coins. And the reason that that entire market hasn't grown by an order of magnitude is because companies like Amazon and Microsoft and government agencies aren't going to move billions of dollars of stable coins around unless they feel comfortable that Treasury and the administration endorses them. And when we see FDIC-approved banks, when you see a JP Morgan issue a stable coin, you may see $1 trillion worth of that. And let me just characterize the entire movement. This is a rotation from an entrepreneurial-driven industry to an institutionally-driven industry. And we're sitting at this point where we're crossing the chasm. And the question is, which entrepreneurs will be institutionalized and come public and get the appropriate regulatory licenses? Which existing institutions will choose to enter the market? Which banks, like the Silvergate banks of the world, will enter the market? And then there will be a shakeout. And obviously, 6,500 cryptocurrencies are not going to be around here in a decade. You're going to see many of these things go away as the industry shakes out and as it matures.
All right. Well, you led me right to our lightning round. So want to do some rapid fire questions here. Just looking for quick, short answers. Top three tips for people who want to get into crypto but don't know where to start.
You should educate yourself first. And you shouldn't really do anything until you have a firm conviction. Then do your diligence, be very thoughtful about which vendors that you work with and how you move forward. And then third, take a long time horizon.
Bitcoin is digital property, digital energy, or digital gold? You have to pick one.
Bitcoin is digital energy, and it is the future of the internet.
Web 2.0 or 3.0? What do you think?
I think, they're all marketing phrases. If you actually put a layer of digital energy, or in this case, wrap Satoshis around your persona as you navigate through cyberspace, you can completely eliminate all the things that plague us in the internet. The next internet, the next version of the internet, is a layer of digital energy wrapped around digital information.
Quick one. Favorite chess move? What is it?
I guess the Queen's Gambit as an opening.
Okay. I hear you like routines. What is your daily routine?
I scan the news. I tweet, hopefully something inspirational and constructive and cheerful to the entire Bitcoin community. I hit the gym, get in some daily exercise, and then I take a round of meetings, either business meetings or podcast or something. Work through a bunch of business issues.
When do you look at the price? Is that the first or second thing?
Sometimes, some days I don't look at the price. Some days I do. Mostly I just I just look to see the mood, so I can read the room and figure out what's appropriate and constructive to say in order to drive the narrative forward.
You mentioned Twitter. Your Twitter evolution is kind of epic, and I've got a recent tweet. We've just got a minute left. I want to read back to you. Bitcoin is a swarm of cyber hornets serving the goddess of wisdom, feeding on the fire of truth, exponentially growing ever smarter, faster, and stronger behind a wall of encrypted energy. What's the goal here with these tweets? Where are you going with that?
I tweeted that once I fully grasp what's going on with Bitcoin, Bitcoin is a decentralized network, which means that there are 100 million plus people out there that are supporters of Bitcoin. There are millions and millions of nodes. It is a swarm creature, right? It's a chain reaction in cyberspace. And once you understand that Bitcoin is a chain reaction in cyberspace, it changes your view of the asset and your view of the world and your view of the future.
So what does keep you up at night, Michael? I mean, you have to think about the risks. What do you worry about? It can't be Bitcoin, sunshine, and rainbows in Miami every day.
The truth is, I'm much more comfortable today than any point in my business career because I feel like we have found the right strategy at MicroStrategy, right? The Bitcoin standard strategy. And, you know, I'm happier going to bed every night than I ever have been because I have a mission, and my mission is to educate the world on Bitcoin. And I think I can do a lot of good doing that. And the world has a need. So nothing really keeps me up at night. I'm more motivated than ever.
I think that's a great place to end it. Michael Saylor, founder and CEO of MicroStrategy, thank you for joining us. I'm so glad we had some extended time today. Appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thank you, Emily.
Bloomberg Studio 1.0 is produced and edited by Lauren Ellis and Matt Soto, with special help from Mallory Abelhausen, Tiffany Perez, and Marguerite Gallerini. I'm Emily Chang, your host and executive producer. We've got a great year of shows coming up, so please subscribe and leave us a review. And check out some of our recent episodes, including my chat with Alphabet and Google CEO Sundar Pichai and YouTube CEO Susan Wojcicki. And from the crypto world, Ethereum creator Vitalik Buterin and Coinbase co-founder Fred Ursem. Find it all in the Studio 1.0 library.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.